Coming to you live from Toronto, Canada, this is the Classic Camera Revival. If you don't have gear acquisition syndrome now, you certainly will after listening to our show.
Hey there, folks. Alex Lokes here for Classic Camera Revival, and welcome to 2017 and the first episode of our third season. And we couldn't have gotten here without you. That's right, our faithful listeners. If it hasn't been for your interactions on Facebook and on Twitter and just your positive comments about these shows, we wouldn't be here today. And I personally never thought that we would get here. I thought that we would finish by the first season and be done with it. But hey, you know what? I like being proved wrong. So today we have a wonderful episode. We're going to be talking about Minoltas. That's right. Minolta cameras are ones that I actually started off working with. My very first camera was a Minolta Hi-Matic 7S, which I did talk about in our first season. But the Minoltas that I've been working with more recently are some of their autofocus Maxim lines. Now, interesting little tidbit, if I hadn't have switched to Nikon, I probably would have continued on with Minolta into their pro bodies and even their digital SLRs. And that is until they sold their camera line to Sony, and those early Sony digital SLRs just didn't really feel right in their hands. Ironically, I now shoot a Sony compact system camera. But anyways, enough with digital. Now, there's been two Maxim cameras that I've been working with, and that would be the 5000 and the 700SI. I'm not going to say much about the 5000. It is very much a meh camera, kind of a K-car with the looks of a 1980s VCR. But the Maxim 700SI is definitely a camera worth giving a closer look at. Now, this is an autofocus camera, and the autofocus isn't fast, but the one really cool thing about it is the iStart system. So essentially, it will pick up that you have your hand on the grip, and as soon as you bring it up to your eyes, there's a contrast sensor. So it will automatically measure exposure and start the focusing, which, you know what, as someone who loves to pull the camera up, get a good quick shot, wonderful. In fact, if you put a prime lens onto it, you can essentially work this camera one-handed. Of course, no camera is 100% perfect. Again, like I said, the autofocus is a little bit slow. It sometimes misses. Not as bad as, say, the Maxim 5000, but it's not like the cameras that I'm used to, especially the Nikon F5 or even the F90, which is pretty fast when it comes to autofocus. And then there's the battery. It takes one of those weird special ones, and it's just really hard to find when you're outside of, say, a major city with a specialty camera store or even a battery store. So I don't really know about the longevity of these things, but if you're going on a long trip, especially into the middle of nowhere, it's definitely worth bringing a spare along. That about covers this particular camera for me. I'm now going to turn the show over to John Meadows, Mike Pataxi, and the wonderful Bill Smith. All right, that's it for me. I'll be back at the end of the episode.
And next we have Mike, and Mike is going to talk about the Minolta XE5.
Thanks a lot. The Minolta XE5, this is a rather interesting little camera. I mean, by little, it's not exactly that compact when you consider, but in comparison to, say, Nikon F2 or Canon A1, something like that, it's fairly small. I guess not a Canon A1, a Canon F1. It's fairly small, but it's actually a little hefty on like as far as weight wise. I mean, it's got a fair bit of weight. It's got a really neat viewfinder hump, or the prism is. Mm-hmm. It's black and it has this beautiful XE5 logo on it. It's really, really nice. I kind of regret selling it when I sold it, but at the same time, the guy kind of had a pretty interesting sob story, so to speak. He was buying the camera for his girlfriend to try to get her into film photography, so really, how could I say no? So, but on a more user-based part of the camera. I found it was actually quite interesting. I mean, it was a fairly automatic camera if you allowed it to be, but it did have full manual overrides. And the only thing is you needed a battery with this camera because, well, it's the XE series, so it's an electronically-based camera. But it was really, really accurate. I mean, since it is, I believe it was an electronically controlled shutter. It's been a while since I've used it. That when you set the time, it was bang on accurate. And the only time that you're going to have an issue is if the electronics start to fail. And then just like, say, on the AE series cameras by Canon, like the Canon AE-1 or Canon A series, since it's all electronically driven, that once the electronics fail, that means the shutter begins to either lag or it just won't fire.
It's like one board.
Yeah, it's basically all just one board. And once it fails, that's it. It's done. There's nothing you can do, which is really unfortunate because it has a really good potential to be an excellent camera. That aside, it had some really nice features on it. I mean, it had stop-down preview. And if you're using a lens that has a slow aperture like the one I was at the time, it allows you to be able to override the automatic aperture drive on it. So this way, when the camera fires a shutter, with it's not trying to stop down the aperture, that if it's slow, it's going to lag as it comes down. You're going to get overexposed images. It allows you to override that and get the aperture already stopped down when you trip the shutter. Now, that would be a pain in the butt for the majority of people, but if you're used to using preset lenses, it's nothing. The other nice thing about it is that it's very, very easy to use. I mean, it's got great balance to it. It's just really nicely designed. It's got a very bright viewfinder. And like all Minolta, like old Minolta SLRs using the MD mount, lenses are plenty. And they're very, very darn good lenses, especially the Rocker lenses. They're also very inexpensive. I mean, if you have one of these or you've used one previously, you can probably vouch to this, that the lenses are excellent, that they are very plentiful, and they're very inexpensive.
I had an SRT 101 temporarily, just with the one lens, like the 50, it was a Rocker lens, and the sharpness was quite outstanding. It's interesting how some brands of lenses, like the Rockers or some of the Mamiya glass, is a real bargain out there in terms of pricing.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I don't really notice too much of the market driving the prices on those up. Because, I mean, sure, people are buying them for their Micro Four Thirds cameras and mirrorless cameras. But at the same time, they're more going after the other lenses, like the M42s, which are being driven up. Or they're going after the Canon 8, like FD mount lenses, which are being driven up a bit. But Minolta, I find their lens prices on their old MD mount have kind of plateaued and they're kind of sitting at a pretty constant level. That said, that doesn't mean that they're cheaply built. They're really nice. You can get them for a bargain, which is a great way for if, let's say, you've never shot 35mm film. It's fantastic. The Minoltas, their cameras are really inexpensive, and the lenses are inexpensive. So that makes it a perfect choice if you are just getting into photography or film photography for that matter. It is one of the best choices to get into, and I can guarantee you'll love the cameras. And if you can find a good working XE model camera like the XE5, I'd say go for it. But unfortunately, they're electronic.
Yeah, so I guess that's like the sudden death syndrome. Like I had a Nikon FG, had the same thing. The board just died. And
yeah,
I was told, sorry. So you really want to have, if at all possible, make sure you get a return policy, or ideally get a chance to try the camera, with a battery to make sure it works.
Yeah, that's actually the best bet, is if you can get your hands on one to try, I'd say try it. And this way you can decide whether you want to buy that camera or not. But as John was mentioning about the sudden death syndrome, they do have it. And in a lot of ways, I feel a little bit guilty selling the guy the XE5 because I'm now aware of that as a possibility. Now, does that mean that a week after I sold him the camera, it died? No, he never contacted me again, other than I think about a month later, he contacted me just asking me what kind of battery that camera uses, because it died on him and he didn't know exactly where it was and he didn't know how to replace it. So I told him where it was, told him what kind of battery it was. And so he was able to find it, and that was the last I heard of him. So I'm pretty confident that the camera still worked at least a week after, a month after. But as far as now, who's to say? Who knows? Maybe it's still working. Maybe he decided to move on to a better camera or a different camera, maybe one mechanical. But when it comes down to it, if you want a really, really decent camera, you can get one that really, really works. You're looking for basically bargain prices on really, really beautiful glass. I'd look at an XE5, absolutely. If it comes from someone who is a photographer, let's say they're passing it down, yeah, absolutely. Definitely would recommend one. But again, just like I'll say the same thing as John did, see if you can get one that you can try in person.
Okay, thanks, Mike. And now over to Bill, talking about the SRT-102.
The Minolta SRT-102 was introduced, actually the SRT-101 was introduced in 1966, and it was very much a groundbreaking camera for its day. And a lot of the features that were in it got carried over to the 102. For a fact, the SRT series is like the first camera series to have a very basic matrix metering. It had not one, but two sensors within the prism. So it kind of reduced your over and under exposures, which is great. Now, the 102 was introduced in 1973. Now, this is where things get a little weird, because Minolta, in its infinite wisdom, decided to classify its cameras differently in different markets. So if you got a SRT-102, that came from North America. If you somehow stumble across an SRT-303 in your travels, that's essentially a 102, but it was for Europe. And if you get an SRT Super, well, you were probably shopping in Hong Kong or Japan at the time, or Taiwan, when you found that in the early 70s. So what's different about the SRT-102? And again, it's probably what I consider one of the best of the line. If you're out to get into the SRT series, they are very inexpensive. You can probably get it. Like, I picked up mine from John Titterington on eBay. Like, I spent a lot for it, but it's fully restored. The meters are working perfectly. I spent about $150 US for it. And you know what? It's up to you. If you do find it on eBay, his listings, and you want something that's better than new, yeah, you decide yourself if you want to drop that kind of money. I consider it a great investment, because you get access to a brilliant line of lenses. So what's so different about the 102 compared to the 101? Now, the thing is, Minolta kept the 101 in production and kept it as sort of the midline camera, sort of the better line, whereas the 102 was the best. And what it had in the viewfinder is you had both the shutter speed and the aperture. Now, if you are going to hunt for an SRT-1, and again, I consider it, like, I've shot with the 202, which was sort of its replacement. Like, the 102 was built from 1973 to 75. The 202 replaced it from 75 till probably around 78, and that's when things start getting a little weird with their designations, because they kind of sort of decontenting it a little bit to save money. The 102 is the one I'd look for. Now, the weird thing with the 102 is they halfway through the production run, they got rid of mirror lockup. Why? Well, ask the Minolta engineers at the time. They probably, again, it was one of those, we want to keep the price point at a certain point. And so it goes. So if you probably want to find one with the mirror lockup if you're looking for the ultimate machine. Other than that, it's a really reliable camera. And the thing is, you can find SRT-101s on Kijiji, Craigslist, or Evil Bay for anywhere between $25 and $75. $75 if it comes with the lens. If you get the 51-4, which to me is the real jewel of the line, and if you get a 58-1-4, yeah, that's a really nice one from what I've read.
What kind of batteries does it take? Does it take some variety of mercury cell?
It is, unfortunately, the Minolta, and again, like a lot of camera companies at that age, they were using the dreaded 1.3-volt 625. My Titterington restored 102 has been converted to 1.5 volts. So if you can find that silver oxide 625 battery, which they are available, I believe a company called Xcel makes them. You can find them through Batteries in a Flash online at a reasonable cost, and you just keep sailing away. Alternately, there are little cottage industries out there who make sort of kind of like a little like metallic metal,
an adapter
that you can throw in a 357, off you go. Or if you've got one that hasn't been converted to 1.5 volts, but for some strange reason it works great with wean cells, you can then get one of those Canto MR9 adapters, and then you sail away with the 357 battery, which is, you can get pretty much anywhere.
But to clarify, you don't need a battery to use this camera. It can work without a battery, except for the meter, of course.
Yeah, that's correct. And my brother, he has a black SRT-101. The meter is unfortunately not for this world, and he just uses his Siconic L398 meter, and yep, can't go wrong with them.
Okay, well, to end this off, I would definitely like to thank Bill Smith for joining us today. It's always a pleasure to have him on board, and we'll definitely see more of him through our third season. And just to end off the episode, we have heard some absolutely fantastic news. That's right. Our good friends, the yellow grandfather of photography, Kodak Alaris, at this year's Consumer Electronics Show, has released some absolutely fantastic news. Yes, that's right. In quarter four of this year, we are going to be seeing brand new, reformulated Kodak slide film. Yes, you heard that right. Kodak is getting back into the E6 game with a reformulated version of E100. So we are definitely looking forward to that. And once we get our hands on the material and have tested it out, we hope to bring it to you in a review form, hopefully by the end of the year. If not, we will definitely do a in-depth look at it in season 4 in 2018. Listen to me, it's already January and I already have this much optimism in our podcast that we will be going into a fourth season. But anyways, just like to wrap this up, we have an absolutely incredible third season all lined up to you. Lots more guest hosts, lots more fun. We're going to be talking folding cameras. We're going to be talking Canon, Nikkormat, 90s SLRs. We're going to do another mystery camera challenge. We're going to give some love to the twin lens reflex cameras. And that wraps it up for episode 25. So, that being said, my name's Alex Lokes. Keep that film rolling, keep those shutters firing, and as always, keep your sticks on the ice.